case is Schmeidler versus Schmeidler. Counsel, you may approach, and feel free to correct my pronunciation if I missed it.
I think you're spot on there, Your Honor.
Close enough? Okay, thank you.
My name is Scott Graff, and I represent the appellant Benjamin Schmeidler in this appeal from a decree entered in the District Court of Clay County, Nebraska on March 15, 2017. As part of that decree, the court entered a threatening determination and parenting plan, which primarily forms the basis of this appeal. The court also divided the marital estate, which provides the other basis for this appeal. From a procedural background, this was a divorce case that was filed in May of 2016. The answer was filed by the appellee's counsel in June of 2016. There was no temporary orders entered in the case from the time of filing the complaint or the answer until September of 2016. From the time the complaint was filed until the time of the temporary order, the parties shared joint custody. Mr. Schmeidler, my client, had overnight parenting time Friday night, Saturday night until Sunday evening, as well as Monday overnight and Wednesday overnight. For some reason, the appellee moved for a temporary order. Temporary order was entered, which was almost as bad for Mr. Schmeidler as the parenting plan set forth in the decree in this matter. I guess we'll start with the easy issue first. As part of the decree in this case, there's a safety plan entered by the trial judge. Clearly that safety plan is an improper delegation of the court's authority pursuant to Deacon, as well as this court's opinion from October 2017 at A-16-1162, Verbon versus Verbon. The safety plan should be stricken entirely from the decree. It's so far beyond the pale that even if it wasn't this court's precedent to not allow trial courts to delegate their authority, it's just not warranted by the evidence. The second issue is the
court. Just for clarification, we don't have a problem with the provision.
I think this court ruled back in October on a case I was involved in that was permissible if the court deems it appropriate. In that case, the father in that case had three arrests for DUI, two convictions, one that was reduced to a reckless driving and some other reckless conduct, two of which had the presence of a minor child in that case. In this case...
And remind us of the name of that case.
That's Verbon versus Verbon. And
that's the one you previously cited.
Yeah, yes. A-16-1162. In this case, my client's had no alcohol-related offenses for the 10 years prior to the trial. He's had nothing. Accusations by the appellee that he consumes alcohol, and that results in an order from the trial court that says if he has alcohol in his breath, he doesn't get visits, et cetera, et cetera. So, under the trial court's reasoning, if any parent ever has a glass of wine, has a beer, she equates that to intoxication and inability to parent, which I don't think is fair and equitable, or in the minor child's best interest. Furthermore, a parenting plan is supposed to preserve and foster a relationship between the minor children or child of the parties and a non-custodial parent. This parenting plan grants my client less than Wilson v. Wilson parenting time for not having any convictions, alcohol or otherwise, except for distributing the peace conviction 2 years prior to the birth of this minor child. Next, we get to the court's issuing an order that the minor child cannot have contact with her aunt and uncle while in my child's care. There's no basis for that other than the appellee requested it, and the court granted it something for that reason. The next issue we have is the transportation issue. And this court will notice that the parenting plan was essentially written by appellee's counsel as well as the property division. But the trial court is so concerned about my client's alcohol consumption and inability to stay sober that she required him to do all the driving 30 miles each way for parenting time. Clearly, requiring him to do all of the driving is not equitable. We would ask the court to apportion that equally between the parties. for 4 months we had 50-50 parenting time. He now gets 4 days a month and 2 weeks in the summer, alternating holidays. We just don't believe that's in the minor child's best interest, and does not preserve and foster a relationship between the minor child and the non-custodial parent, who is my client. As pertains to the property, attached to the decree is the defendant's, which is the appellee's, proposed distribution. That proposed distribution, if everything went their way, required us to pay the appellee $3,900. Court says, no, we're going to give the appellee more than what they're asking for. And the way the court did that is they were presented with a bill, a debt, for the FSA note, which was $32,000. The appellee says, I think it's worth $20,000. No basis for that. The court, of course, adopts the appellee's value of and completely disregards the best evidence, which is the statement showing when the date, when the loan originated, which was May of 2016, when it became due, May of 2017. We had trial in between those dates, and she, of course, adopts the value promulgated by the appellee. And when the appellee was questioned on her value, had no basis for it, much like the hay and much like everything else that she testified to as to the property. We think that the equalization payment ordered by the trial court should be vacated. I think that if no equalization payments due by either party, that probably falls within the range of fair and equitable. Based on my math, if the court adopts the best evidence, which is the loan documents, I think the appellee would owe my client just under $1,000. But again, that's not the primary reason we're here. Obviously, the improper delegation of the court to the appellee to essentially do whatever she wants as it pertains to my client's parenting time, and then the appellee argues in their brief, well, it's really up to the appellant whether or not he gets parenting time. It's not the appellee's choice. Completely misses the point, in my opinion. These aren't difficult facts. I just think that the property is completely inequitable, and the parenting plan issued by the court is not in the minor child's best interest, is not supported by the evidence. We would ask this court to review it de novo and come up with something that this court determines is in the minor child's best interest, and which does fairly inequitably divide the marital estate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Ben Murray. I'm here on behalf of the defendant appellee, Jesse Schmeidler. Your Honors, I think the issues of the FSA note and evaluation, the court found that she ordered the $5,000 equalization payment in lieu of doing a mathematical calculation, I believe. But I think all of that is within her discretion. I want to, I guess, address the safety plan more than anything else. The court didn't actually delegate any authority to Mrs. Schmeidler in this case.
Well, she can withhold visitation.
She can't. What the safety plan holds is that she is allowed to have him take a breathalyzer, doesn't order him to do it. If he tests positive for alcohol, he forfeits his visitation. Same thing if he drinks. The same thing if he... Yes, I think the issue with him was the amount of time.
If that's the case, then the effect is she should be required to take a test positive.
Well, there was no... The court held that there was... That he was a danger to the child.
I'm asking you.
I think the husband was a danger to the child. He's shown signs of violence, which is, I think, the greater problem that we had at trial. The testimony was so overwhelming that at the close of evidence, the court modified the temporary order to add a safety plan, which is different from this one, but just to address the alcohol and the violence issues. The other reports, he'll report it. And if the child was involved during any period of time when he drank, he agrees to forfeit his next parenting time. So this doesn't delegate any authority to my client. It orders him to self-report if he was drinking with the child, and then he forfeits any visitation time. It doesn't give any decision to my client. She doesn't ever get to say, you lose this time. It's all.
So she's allowed to pick up the child and end the parenting time.
That was if...
if she learns that he has been drinking alcohol.
Right, so that's the first clause of the parenting plan. So, once again, it's still on him to drink or not drink. She doesn't get to say, I'm taking away your parenting time. If she learns of it, he forfeits the parenting time.
I wonder if the information isn't correct.
I'm sorry?
I wonder if the information is not correct that she received. In other words, she receives information that he's been drinking, and he asks her.
Well, I mean, the court didn't address that, so I think...
No problem.
Yeah, I guess it's a problem, and it's not specified how she learns of it or what she learns, just that she learns it, so it presumes that she knows it to be true, I guess. But once again, it's not her decision to take away the parenting.
Well, it says she can go pick the child up.
But it says he gives away, he forfeits the parenting time. The first clause, I believe, says it's agreed that his parenting time shall end. So that's the court ending it. That's not my client ending it. That's the court ending it upon my client gaining knowledge, but it's not my client making the decision. It's not at her discretion. It's still at the court's discretion, making the decision at the time of the order, that if he checks any of these boxes, as soon as it happens, he forfeits. So it's the court making the decision then. It doesn't give any discretion to my client. I think it's important to note that in the order, I mean, the court held that the plaintiff has a documented history of domestic abuse for which he takes full responsibility. So that was from the evidence at trial about he held her down by her hair. He said that he had been arrested for domestic violence, even though it was pled down to a serving of peace. It seemed to be that he did not think any of it was an issue. Everyone testified that they both drank. And the court held that on the issue in which their testimony was opposite, that was more believable. But she just didn't believe it. So, it seems to me that the court was at least aware of this issue. And that's why the order was written in such a way to take the decision on whether or not the appellant got parenting time out of my client's hands. And she just made the decision for both of them. If he does this, he forfeits. If he does this, he forfeits. So at no point is my client allowed to do anything other than buy a breathalyzer and ask him to take it. It doesn't order him to do it. It just says, if he takes it and fails, he forfeits his time. I believe that's all I have.
Any questions?
Can you talk a little bit about why the evidence supported the child being prohibited from being with some of his relatives?
There was testimony that the relatives, the people that are being prohibited from being around the child are actually relatives of my client. And so I think there's a family history there. Also, there was testimony that she believed that these people had been following her. I think she testified that they had been verbally abusive towards her, that there were some alcohol issues there, and that she just didn't trust her child around them. And then the actual woman who was one of the people involved testified at trial, and I think the judge just didn't believe what she said. I think that was it. And then, but it's actually not.
So these are family members of Jessica's?
Yeah, they family members of Jessica, and she's saying, I don't want my child around them.
Has family members have the child around them?
He's been asking for them to be around them. Because I think they're friends outside of the marriage, but they're actually relatives of Jesse, and she's saying, I don't want my child anywhere near these people.
Can you talk about the value of the bone that was taken out there?
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason why the judge went with the $5,000 in lieu of the mathematical calculation, because we had our valuation, and I don't recall off the top of my head what that was, but I think Ben testified at trial the two different values, and then they had a banker testify, but then he didn't testify about the loan, but then he admitted that he had been fired from his job for bad lending practices. That's in the record, too.
Well, I'm showing that Jessica valued the loan at $20,000, and that Benjamin indicated that it was more than that.
Yeah, and I think there was some issue with the amount of cattle that had been purchased. But if $20,000 is what we put, then I mean, that's what I believe it to be. But I think there was a question about how many cattle lived after he bought them, how much was owed on it. Some of the cattle were empty, like they weren't going to have baby cows. So I don't think anyone ever actually settled on the correct amount, which I think is part of the problem here.
Were there some additional calves purchased, or did the herd increase, the loan increase, after the separation of the parties?
I don't know. I think it did, but we never have evidence on that. That was part of the problem. We couldn't really put an exact value on it. We couldn't figure out how much was owed.
Do you agree, though, that the value of the
law, whatever it is American
flag. Yes.
No further questions. Thank you. How much time does the appellee, appellant have remaining?
As the appellee, I was reading through the safety plan, the parenting plan. You'll notice that it says, it is agreed. My client never agreed to anything. This was a parenting plan that was written by the appellee's attorney, provided to the judge. And typically, after I get done with the bail on trial, I get an order back to have some changes or independent thought or something in it. This basically took their proposed distribution, ordered it into effect, took their parenting plan, ordered it into effect, and after reviewing the findings by the court and the record, or the findings by the court, you'd think that my client was Jeffrey Dahmer, but when you review the record, it's an incident here, an incident there, none of which involved the party's minor child, and most of which happened way before the minor child was even born.
So you don't think the language that of the safety plan that says your client forfeits that takes it out of the realm of improper delegation?
I don't think so, because basically you're assigning the court's authority to the appellee to be the policeman, and then she can do whatever she wants, and just the vagueness of it, if she has information from where, a Facebook post, what information is there, and then we have to go into court to get our time back, it seems like a complete waste of judicial economy to me, and it's not in the best interest of the party's minor child. I think the better instance is, he shows up and he's stumbling intoxicated. She says, I'm not sending the child with you. He says, fine, I'll file a contempt, and then they can take it up with the judge at that point in time. Makes a lot more sense to me than someone that has no prior alcohol convictions at all during this child's lifetime has to basically go to the appellee as the guardian for the court. I just don't think that's appropriate at all.
Is it your position that the evidence does or does not support that he was convicted of domestic violence?
Does not. He was
reduced to a charge less than domestic violence.
Correct. He wasn't on probation. He didn't go to jail. It was disturbing the peace. I don't know what the underlying facts were. I wasn't there for the factual basis 2 years prior to the child being born, which had no bearing on this child's best interest because the minor child wasn't even in the womb at that point in time. So I don't know how it didn't go to the child. happens, you stay married, you have a child, file for divorce, you 4 months joint custody, and then, oh, it's an emergency and he's violent, we've got to protect this child. This flies in the face of common sense. We would ask the court to vacate and reverse those portions of the decree, which are contrary to law.
There was no evidence of any disturbance.
In August of 2016, there was a file cabin incident. Again, minor child, not within 100 miles of that incident. No effect on the minor child, but for some reason, that's a reason to go from joint custody to what we ended up with.
Thank you, counsel. You are excused and your case is submitted. And we are now in recess for the day.